Hi, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. Our mission here at Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live well in spite of your mental health challenge by sharing insights through interviews, practical tools for living well, encouragement and courage for overcoming all from a Christian perspective. And now, here's your host, Pastor Brad Hayes.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. I'm Brad Hayes, your host. Our purpose here on Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live a faith-filled, rich, and full life in spite of having a mental health diagnosis. Today, I want to talk with you about a topic that really is a topic that applies to everybody's lives. So many of us were raised in shame-based environments. As far as I know it, there's never been a perfect family on this earth. There's been only one perfect person, and he was part of an imperfect family. But so often with that imperfection comes overwhelming sense of shame. And we live in such a perfection-driven society, which even feeds the shame more, that I think most of us deal with shame in some way or another. Hopefully, this will help you to deal with it in less of a toxic way, if you will, to identify the core issues between being shame-based and grace-based. A couple of years ago, I read a book by a doctor called The Soul of Shame. And let me tell you, it was profound. It had a profound impact on my life because he really talks about original sin and shame and how deep that gets into us and how it's really part of the human condition. I would recommend that book, although it's pretty heavy reading. It's not light reading and it's not easy reading, but it certainly is very in-depth. But in the meantime, I'd like to offer this podcast to you today, hopefully helping you identify the differences between a shame-based family and a grace-based family. There's some significant differences. First of all, let me just ask you four questions about that will help you identify whether shame is possibly becoming or is an issue in your life. First of all, do you feel unworthy and believe that each time you make a mistake, it's more of a validation of how worthless you are? In other words, every time you make a mistake, it's a validation of the fact you feel as though you're not worth much. It's a validation of the fact that I'm not as gifted, I'm not gifted, or I'm not this, or I'm not that. It's just validation of that. Second question, do you strive to be perfect in the hopes that perfection will make you seem as good as everyone else? You know, perfectionism can really be a horrible thing in one's life. In fact, I've heard that as being one of the greatest ways that people harm themselves is through perfectionism. It's really a thing that hurts us when we believe that if we can be perfect, that will make us more in line with everyone else or as good as everyone else. Thirdly, do you live in fear that others will find out how secretly disorganized, late, careless, or stupid you really are? That you've kind of got to keep this wall, this facade up, or otherwise other people will really find that out. I know I lived that way for many years, and now I just let people know how disorganized I really am and how careless sometimes I am. Anyway, the fourth question is, has your pattern of avoidance dealing with situations after you've messed up led you to lost relationships or money or jobs or even opportunities? The avoidance of really dealing with a situation after you've messed up. Boy, do I have a great example of that. A number of years ago on the staff of our church, we had a custodian. He was a great guy. Great guy and very capable. And we asked him to refinish and or clean and refinish our floors in our fellowship hall. And they're difficult. It's kind of an old school thing. And in the process, he was taking the wax off of the floor and it splattered up on the floorboards. It wasn't a big deal, but we talked with him about it, etc. And that night, he left. We expected to see him again the next morning, and he never came back. He never called us. He never came back. He never even came back to get his tools. Finally, we called him and said, hey, what's going on? Oh, I can't do it. I messed up. And he never did come back to even get his tools or his last paycheck. You talk about an avoid or a pattern of avoiding situations in which you've messed up. Oh, my goodness. I felt such pain for him. Now, you talk about shame. That is certainly a situation where somebody's feeling a lot of shame. So how about you with these four questions, you know? Do you feel unworthy each time you mess up, believing that that validates, once again, how worthless you are? And secondly, do you strive to be perfect in the hopes that your perfection will make you seem as good as everyone else? Do you live in fear that others will find out how secretly disorganized, late, and careless or stupid you really are? And has a pattern of avoidance dealing with situations after you've messed up led to loss of money, jobs, opportunities, and relationships? They say that if you answer yes to at least two of these questions, then shame is a dominant factor in your life. And you may not even be consciously aware of how strongly your feelings of inadequacy influence your behavior. And those feelings of inadequacy come from shame. I want to identify for you some of the characteristics of shame-based relationships that you'll find in families or in relationships. So I'm going to identify 10 of them. The first one is out loud shaming. In out loud shaming, the message is communicated, something's wrong with you. Something is really wrong with you. You should have known better. You should have been able to. Anyone would know that. You know, those messages that are sent to us over and over and over. You're defective. You don't measure up. Why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like your sister? Why can't you just not? Okay, that's out loud shaming. Instead of talking about the behavior or things like that, we're talking about there must be something wrong with you. The second one is performance orientation. In this, the focus is on doing certain good behaviors and avoiding other behaviors as a means of earning love, gaining acceptance, acquiring approval, or proving failure. And failure to perform these things results in shame. Or you could even say, to do the things you were trying to avoid doing will result in shame also. It's this driven performance society that we live in that really feeds this orientation, if you will. But it's about we become worth something because of what we can do, not because of who we are. It means that I can certainly get A's and I can do this and I can avoid getting into trouble at school, for instance. And that kind of behavior and that kind of performance constitutes accolades and makes me feel worth something. And so it's all based upon my behavior and how I perform. Thirdly, in a shame-based family, there's unspoken rules. A behavior is governed by rules or standards that are seldom, if ever, spoken out loud. In fact, sometimes the only way that they are discovered is when they're broken. There is a I can't talk about it rule in effect, which means no one is supposed to notice or mention problems. And if you speak about the problem, you become the problem. This forces people to keep quiet. And there's also a can't win rule in effect. For instance, children are taught never to lie. They are also told to never tell grandma that her meatloaf tastes bad. Do you see the dilemma? No matter how hard you try to keep these contradictory rules, you always fail to perform. And failure to perform them results in shame. And these rules tend to govern future relationships unless they are realized and broken on purpose. Number four, communicating through coding. Talking about feelings or needs directly leaves you feeling ashamed for being so selfish. For instance, if you say, "I really need this from you," or "I'm feeling as though I should receive this," or "I need to have this," talking about that makes you feel selfish. Talking about problems breaks the can't talk rule and gets you shamed for becoming the problem. Therefore, family members learn to say things in code, always trying to figure out what the real meaning of what's being said is. Or they send messages to each other indirectly through a third party, another person. This really shows up in a lot of relationships, doesn't it? Where you say something and the other person is still digging for what is it that you really mean by what? What are you really trying to say? And sometimes you're just trying to say what you said. And that's evidence of somebody really dealing with coding that went on in their family of origin or in many of their present relationships, possibly even, where it's coding is used in a shame-based family. So number five in these characteristics of shame-based families is idolatry. With idolatry, family members are taught to turn to things and people rather than on God's acceptance as their measure of value and identity. In other words, if mom and dad think I'm good, then I'm good. If this teacher thinks I'm good, then I'm good. Instead of being okay with who you are in Christ and holding that as the measure of your worth. And so the measuring stick instead becomes how things look, what people think. It becomes based upon my religious behavior and acquiring possessions. Look good, then I am good. So in other words, I get my acceptance and building up of my self-worth not based upon who Christ says I am, or his love for me. It's based on outward performance again. Number six in the characteristics of shame-based families is putting kids through a hard time. Unfortunately, this happens in far too many families. And kids end up involved in the messy and imperfect process of finding out about life. But the family cares more about how things look and what people think. Or just being a kid becomes a shaming thing. In other words, children must learn to act like miniature adults in order to avoid shame. This is when a parent says, "Well, shame on you. You should have known." Or, "Why didn't you know that? You should have known that at this age," or blah, blah, blah. "Or you should have known better." Oh, my goodness. You know, and we expect that of children. Well, children are children. For instance, a three-year-old's going to be selfish. That's just the way it is. And they learn. But that doesn't mean we need to shame them, for instance. Seven in these characteristics of shame-based families is that there's always a preoccupation with fault and blame. See, since there is such a focus on performance in a shame-based family, lack of performance must be tracked down and eradicated. Fault and blame are the order of the day, and the purpose of the question is, who's responsible for this? Who did this? Who is the one to blame? That way, the culprit who did it can be shamed, humiliated, and made to feel so bad that they won't ever do that behavior again. It's a form of manipulation. That is, when you have a preoccupation with shame and blame. So number eight on this list of shame-based relationships The characteristics of shame-based families. Number 8 is strong on-head skills. In other words, family members become experts at defending themselves. Well, who wouldn't when you're getting blamed? You know, when number 7 is blame, of course, you're going to become an expert at defending yourself. Have you ever done this where you just shared something with somebody, it wasn't even about them, and they become so defensive, or maybe somebody says something to you and you become so defensive? Well, it's a sign of this skill that's learned in shame-based families, and that is that the family members become experts in defending themselves. Blaming, rationalizing, minimizing, and denial are just some of the ways that people try to push away the shame message. But they're trying to. In other words, you blame somebody else, or you say, well, if you would have never done this, then I wouldn't have. Or I did this because... I'll never forget when I told somebody I was really sorry for something I had done, and what I had done was very hurtful. And I told my friend, I'm so sorry, but if you understood why, well, then I really wasn't owning it. I was rationalizing it. And then, you know, minimizing it. Oh, you have to get over that. Oh, this or that. And, so you become so strong on head skills. Number 9, the 9th characteristic of a shame-based family is you become weak on heart skills. You can't feel is a rule or a government with a governing system within a shame-based family. Feelings are wrong, selfish or unnecessary. People in shame-based families don't know how they feel or what they feel or why they feel it, and they don't even know how to respond to their feelings. And these are emotionally reactive places, and so what we learn to do is cover them up with more performance, addictions, doing this or doing that, and the pain builds. And number 10, needy people are a characteristic of a shame-based family. Because love and acceptance are earned on the basis of behavior, and no one is perfect, right? But never received apart from performance. So let me read that again. Because love and acceptance are earned on the basis of behavior, but never received apart from performance. Shame-based families are characterized by members who are empty on the inside, looking full and good on the outside. Boy, isn't that true? So if those are the characteristics, let me just run over them very quickly again. Out loud shaming, performance orientation, unspoken rules, communicating through coding, idolatry, putting kids through a hard time, preoccupation with fault and blame, strong on head skills, weak on heart skills, needy people. If those 10 things are the characteristics of a shame-based family, then what do 10 characteristics of a shame-based family look like? Well, in a shame or in a grace-filled family, here's some of these characteristics. First of all, number 1, there's out loud affirming versus out loud shaming. In other words, in grace-filled families, members are told they are loved and acceptable, capable, valuable, and supported out loud. In other words, it's not based upon what you do, it's who you are. And because of who you are acceptable, and I love you for who you are. Phrases like, I love you, you are capable, I'm here for you when you need me, I'm glad God put you into our family, I'm glad you're a boy, or I'm glad you're my girl, I feel good when I'm with you. All those, when using a person's name and speaking to them, are just some of the out loud ways to affirm people. And especially when they're your children. Number 2, grace-filled families are people-oriented versus performance-oriented. And we all need an environment where we feel like our needs are being met, because, see, those of us who grew up in a shame-based family think we don't deserve to have our needs met. But the truth is, we all do. And because of who we are and not because of what we do. So in grace-filled families, love and acceptance does not fluctuate depending on how people act. People are affirmed for being who they are. In shame-based families, behavior is the most important thing. Who you are comes in last. And it's the opposite when it's people-oriented. It's who you are comes first. Thirdly, another characteristic of a grace-filled family is that there are out loud rules and expectations versus unspoken rules. In other words, in a grace-filled family, rules are there to serve people. People are not there to serve the rules. In order for rules to serve the family most effectively, everyone needs to know what the rules are and what the consequences are when they're broken. That's all. Interesting, isn't it? Number four, in grace-filled families, communication is clear and straight versus coding, versus hidden meanings. So communication is clear and straight, and it's always straight with the person that you need to communicate it with. So coding, see, friends, isn't helpful with anyone or for anyone. And certainly triangulating, in other words, sending the message through someone else, is really unhelpful. There's a lot of that that goes on in churches where people will say, "Pastor, so-and-so," or they don't say who it is. They say, "Pastor, a lot of people." Well, that is just straight out coding, and it comes from shame-based, and the pastor's not performing properly, or et cetera. And you find that in a lot of workplaces. You find that in a lot of places where people just don't want to deal with things straight on. But communication is clear and straight when a relationship is grace-oriented, when the environment is grace-oriented, whether it's a church, whether it's a family, or a workplace. In a family, children are great observers but terrible interpreters. So people receiving your message should not have to decode them or interpret them. When you want to send a message, decode it first yourself and then send it straight. Don't triangulate. Do not get in the middle of other people's relationships and run messages for them. And in a grace-filled environment, you just go straight to the person that you have the issue with. And it makes a huge difference. Now, in a grace-filled family, this is the fifth one, God is the source. He is our need meter, our vindicator, our defender. We don't have to defend ourselves. We don't have to look up to anyone else for that. We don't have to be built up by somebody else. What other people think of us is not the most important thing. The one who has the last word on our value and acceptance, he's the one that matters. We are not valuable and acceptable because of how much money we make, the clothes we wear, the church we attend, because we've been faithful in our giving, or we look like everything's good, et cetera, et cetera. But we're good because God loves us. In a grace-filled family, children are enjoyed versus given a hard time for not knowing things that, quote-unquote, they should know. In grace-filled families, it's okay to be a kid, and you're going to act like a kid. You're not going to know everything, and at certain ages, you're just not going to know things, and people aren't going to tell you you should have known or you should know better. Normal, healthy kids are messy about the business of growing up. It's just part of the way it works. Number seven, responsibility and accountability are part of a grace-filled family versus fault and blame. So fault and blame are used in the shame-based family to punish children for their lack of performance and to get them to perform correctly. And it becomes tools in the process of trying to control the behavior of others, where in a grace-filled family, people just take responsibility and they are held accountable, but they are not blamed or shamed in the process. The eighth characteristic in a grace-filled family are that head issues are used for learning versus head issues used for defending themselves. In grace-filled families, thinking is the purpose of learning. In shame-based families, it is used to defend, to blame, to make excuses, and to get out of being responsible. In shame-based families, the question, "Why did you do that?" is a trap. There is no answer that's acceptable. And whatever you say will be analyzed and criticized. But in a grace-filled family, people are pre-approved. And the question, "Why did you do that?" is simply an inquiry to understand the reason why something was done, why someone thought what they thought, why they did what they did. Ninth characteristic of a grace-filled family are that feelings are valid and useful versus weak on heart skills. Remember, a shame-based family is weak on heart skills, whereas a grace-filled family says feelings are valid and useful. In other words, feelings are not right or wrong. They simply exist. They are. Now, feelings could be based upon wrong assumptions, or they could be based upon a lie.
They're
not right or wrong as feelings. Like I said, they may be based on a faulty assumption, but as the feeling itself, no, it's just they exist. And the choices we make in response to our feelings determine good or bad, right or wrong, results of our feelings, that is, whether they are helpful or damaging. And grace-filled families recognize the feelings and the expressions and emotions as opportunities for family members to connect with one another and to understand each other and to gain insight into each other and to show empathy and love for each other. And then the last one, the last characteristic of a grace-filled family is it's okay for the outsides to match the insides. In other words, if the insides aren't doing well, it's okay to not look well on the outside. You don't have to keep appearances up for the sake of performance and not shaming the family or shaming your parents or shaming your loved ones. So that's versus empty people learning to act full, symptom of a shame-based family. In other words, in grace-filled families, what is real is more important than how you can make things look. Life is seen with a process perspective rather than an event perspective. So this means that people don't have to react or attempt to cure behavior forever because God is involved. You don't have to panic. The story's not over, even if it doesn't look good right now. And it's okay if it's not good right now. We're in process. Unacceptable behaviors are about poor choices, not making you a poor person or a bad person. They're not about our value and acceptance as people. Our choices aren't. They're just bad decisions and choices. Grace-filled families don't have to fix one another in order to fix themselves, in order to make themselves look good or feel good, that their children are perfect or that they're good or they're theirs. See? Now, I've taken all of this information from a book called Families Where Grace is in Place by Jeff Van Vonderen. I think it accurately reflects so much of what we experience as people who too easily live out shame. And when you live out that kind of shame in your life, it's going to affect your relationships. It's going to affect your mental health. It's going to affect your brain chemistry. And I would encourage you, if you have a lot of shame in your life, deal with it. Yes, you may have the brain chemistry issue, but that's not causing the shame. The shame is more likely influencing your brain chemistry. And so you got to get to the bottom of it and work through it with somebody, because you are not worthy based upon your performance or how good you are or aren't. You are loved by Christ, And that's what matters. So, my friend, I hope this has been helpful. I'd love to hear from you, especially on this topic. Write me, Pastor Brad at freshhope.us. I'd love to hear from you. And I hope that you'll leave some comments on our podcast site. And we'd love to connect with you on Facebook, Twitter, all those kinds of social media places. And we're on YouTube, on Vimeo, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to connect with you. And especially if you're listening on iTunes, through the iTunes app, would you please leave an honest, heartfelt evaluation or comments on today's program or any program that you listen to? It just helps others find us in the iTunes listings. Now, maybe you have a lot of shame-based thinking. Certainly, seeing a therapist is going to help. Also, attending a healthy support group such as a Fresh Hope mental health support group might be very good for you. We have various ones throughout the country and in numerous other countries other than the U.S. Check out our website for those listings, or you can attend the Fresh Hope group that happens every Wednesday online, and there's others that are starting. And on Thursdays online, we also have a dual diagnosis or co-occurring group. So that's for people with both the mental health piece and the addiction piece, and I encourage you to check that out. You can find these meetings on freshhopemeeting.com, I believe it is. If I'm wrong, you'll be able to find it from our main website, freshhope.us. So I hope you'll tell your friends about this program, pass it on through social media, and until the next time, may the Lord fill you with His hope, fresh and new daily. I'm Brad Haves, your host, and this has been another edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Hope for Mental Health. If you have an opportunity, please review, share, and subscribe to the Fresh Hope for Mental Health podcast on iTunes or on the service that you use. We encourage you to share our podcast on social media with your friends and family. Previous podcasts of Fresh Hope for Mental Health can be found at freshhopeformentalhealth.com, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes. Fresh Hope is one of the leading networks of faith-based peer support groups internationally. For more information about Fresh Hope, go to freshhope.us.